We're going to jump right back in to this whole fasting thing, okay? Thank you, God. That's, you can look at, where is it? It's like in three of the four Gospels, Jesus was asked why his disciples aren't fasting. Because it was a big deal because of the legalistic side. Do you understand why he was asked in three of the four Gospels it's recorded? That he was asked why your disciples don't fast? Because to them it was a works. So, hey, what's up with you? Why aren't they fasting like we're fasting? We got to fast. Why aren't John's disciples fasting? Pharisees fasting. Their disciples, why don't your disciples fast? So he was asked that. I'm not totally sure where all it is. I think it's in Matthew 9. I think it's very early in Mark, maybe chapter 2. And it's in Luke. And I think it's later in Luke. I think it's late chapters of Luke, maybe Luke 19, 18. I could be wrong about that. About fasting, when he was asked about fasting. I know it's Matthew 9. Yeah, it's Mark 2. And it's Luke, later chapters, maybe 18 or 19. I could be wrong, okay? But that's three out of the four Gospels, the same questions recorded. And all the writers, God seemed to think it was important to inspire three of the four Gospel writers to record that. So that means something. That speaks to me, right? Because he's saying it again and again. He has that illustration there. So I don't know if that ever meant anything to you. That just means something to me when I see something several times through the Gospels. Where is it? What is it? Luke 18? Good. I thought it was 18 or 19. Thank you. Luke 18, 12. I'm sure it's Mark 2 and Matthew 9. Same question asked. Here it is, verse 14. Then the disciples of John came to him saying, why do we and the Pharisees fast often? Often. But your disciples do not fast. Jesus said to them, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. No one puts a piece. Now, this is powerful because this just seems weird. He goes right in. Jesus is amazing. Like in the one section of the Gospels, they come and say, hey, the Greeks are here. The Greeks are here at this festival. They want to see you, Lord. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies and abides alone. It's like, what does that have to do with the Greeks are here and they want to see you? It's just, Jesus is amazing. He's just, Nicodemus says, nobody can do the things you do unless God's with him. He says, unless you be born again, you will not see the kingdom of God. I mean, it's just, he's so calculated. It's just intense. Because it almost makes it look like, because our minds are so rational, it makes him look like he's out of his mind. But the only difference is he's out of our mind. Do you get it? He's out of our mind. He's not out of his. He's out of yours. And he wants yours to become like his. That's why he's telling us to fast. I'm just having fun with that. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Now, he's pulling this totally away from just the reason these guys are fasting. And Jesus is there. He's teaching. The bridegroom is with him. He's setting an example. He's pouring into him. He's got them in. They're having daily communion with the Lord. True? And he's teaching them firsthand by example, through words. He's doing, teaching, doing. It's just awesome. And then he says, there's a day coming. They're going to fast. And isn't it amazing that he gave them a command to go heal in Matthew 10. They went out and did it. In Luke 10, they went out and did it and got total results and came back rejoicing. In Matthew 17, he was nowhere around. He was on the mountain. Peter, James, and John was with him. Could there have been feelings there? There could have been. There they go again, the three elite. Wonder why we don't get to go. Because those guys, Dean and I talked about this last week. I said, we don't preach a lot because it's speculation, but it's very possible. They were talking about who'd be the greatest, who's going to sit at the right and left, and the others were indignant of the question. All of a sudden, Peter, James, and John, there they are again, going off with Jesus, and here we are again. I could have some... could have some issues there, right? But regardless, let's just say you don't have a grid for that. Here's what we do know. Jesus isn't there. And he's not giving them a direct command. And now they're left at the mercy of their own minds and understandings. And out of past experience and past practice, the daddy brings, because why not go to the disciples? Word spread, and these guys have done miracles too. Right? And they pray, and it doesn't happen. Isn't it amazing? Jesus wasn't there. It wasn't a direct command. Do you get it? The first person David Hogan ever saw raised from the dead, he said, before I tell you that, I have to tell you defeat or failure. He said, I pulled a boy out of the river, Monsoon Rivers, drowned, 9-year-old little boy or whatever he was. Or no, he's a 14-year-old boy. Pulled him out. He said, and the crowds are all around and they're shouting and crying and all these things are going on. And he said, right in the middle of all that pandemonium, the Lord said, pray for him. I will raise him from the dead. And he said, and I'm going to show you what I did. He said, let me show you what I did. He said, I turned and I walked away. And he just said how bad of a day that was. He said, let me tell you why. He said, because of the faces of men. Because all in the fear of man. And he's so passionate on that video. I watched that over and over. He says, not anymore. No siree, not for me. He said, that's why I seem aggressive to you. He said, that's why I seem overpowering. He said, because no way. He said, I've tasted the bowels of failure. And I know. And he said, it's a bad and sour pill. He said, I won't even let you up at the table with me anymore. And he just goes on. He says, not anymore. So you learn through some of your greatest mistakes. Man, it would be a sad day if we had to make mistakes and couldn't learn through them just to make them again. Thank God for mercy, huh? That's a good thought on fasting, why I'm on it. When you pursue fasting and you're being taught like this and you get inspired to step out and fast, just know you can't fail and do wrong. How's that? You can't fail. If you break your fast earlier than you wanted to, if you break down in a moment of weakness, I'm not giving your flesh permission. I'm teaching grace right now. The fact that you're even thinking in this direction and pursuing and growing is a big deal. Now, do you want to discipline yourself? Do you want to press through the feelings, the weakness? Yeah, go for it. But not at the cost of being condemned if you don't make it to where you were. And it's hard to teach because it sounds like you're provoking weakness, but you have to be very careful. You're not just self-disciplined in the sense of where it works at the cost of condemnation. Because if you do anything that takes away from you if you fail and condemns you, you've crossed the line. You've stepped out of grace. God's not disappointed when you break your fast. He's excited that you're even thinking this way and pursuing to grow and know him more and da 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 da. You have to see the goodness of God in all that. If you get so rigid that you have this goal out here and if you don't make it, you're almost going to die and not love yourself, then reestablish your motive. Okay? Actually, grace is what empowers me. I don't know about you, but I've learned that if I set myself to stuff and in my own strength and discipline, I probably am going to fail and I'm probably going to see less of myself. Grace actually takes me to the finish line. Knowing that God loves me, he's for me. I'm not under the pressure of what I used to be under. That there's a broad place. There's a lot of liberty in my life. That relationship alone takes me the long run. If that makes sense to you. Just knowing God's good. That doesn't give me a weakness of flesh. It doesn't mean, oh, well, God will still love me. I'll just eat the cracker. That isn't what it produces. It's not, oh, well, God will still love me. I'll just eat the cracker. No, God, you're in this. You're with me. And I thank you. Your grace has taken me through. And I thank you that you're building the strength in my life. And you're crushing this voice of the flesh, this carnal cry, this passion and unbridled desire thing, this furnace I've fed my whole life. You're quenching it. And I thank you for your love. And all of a sudden, through prayer, you're crossing hurdles you've never made it over before. Because you understand he's with you. And you're not doing it for him. You're doing it with him. Make sense? You're not doing it for him. If you think you're doing it for him, you'll feel like you failed. You're not doing anything for him. Okay? Because you'll just feel like you failed. You're not fasting for the Lord. You're fasting for your own soul's sake. You get it? He says, unless no one puts an unshrunk cloth on an old garment. John even asked a question. If somebody has diabetes, something like that, he said, well, they wouldn't be able to fast, medical conditions. In David Hogan's work, they didn't all were unable to fast for certain reasons, didn't see receive healing in areas yet and whatever. And it's not a works. It's not a mandate. It's not a... You could do whatever you can do. You can step out and do and just start to begin to enter into the principles of fasting to accomplish the right stuff. That whole Daniel fast thing, you can do that and just stay away from choice things. At the same time, what a good tool, trigger point to release a faith in the total restoration of your body and the healing. And just believe that God's upon you and you speak life to your body. And as you're stepping out in faith, fasting, and certain things are happening and you're just in that place. And it's never about failing. It's always about growing. Amen. See, because we think it's about failing a lot of times, we fail to grow. And we feel like, well, I did that, brother. No, I tried that for a season. Man, that didn't work for me. That's a very limited mindset. That's a mindset that God would love to remove from us. It's not about been there, did that, done that. It's not a method. This is a lifestyle of love, and we're growing in Him. You know? It could be like anything in relationships, marriage, whatever. Well, I tried that. Didn't work. This wouldn't work out too good. You know, it could be all that stuff, and then that mentality leads into every other area of your life. Well, I worked there for a while. I didn't like it. It just wasn't working. I just quit. And all of a sudden, you missed the blessing of being an example in the workplace, and it was just about you, your hours, how you feel. You don't want to get up, and all of a sudden, you're alive again. Come on, these things need talked about. All of a sudden, it's just about you dreading your job instead of realizing that you're the image of Christ on that job. And thank God for the privilege and honor. And the hours aren't the greatest. But you know what? Until something changes, I'm going to go in here and shine the light of your glory. And I thank you for provision. And I appreciate the grace in my life to do what you've called me to do. When I worked in the warehouse, food warehouse, I despised it, man. I was already a mess. And when I'd go through the door to start my shift, I was a Dr. Jekyll and Hyde dude. I'm telling you, I was already miserable. And I'd go through the door and I was bad. I was like, here I am again. Work. I'd rather be this, and this. Then I'm like, my family better appreciate the sacrifice I make. And I'd hold it over them that I was earning a living. And no wonder I'm taking off. Are you kidding? I worked all week. You wouldn't even live in this house if I didn't go to work. I used to say that to my kids when they were tiny. I'd say, you need to stop your complaining. You ought to be glad I just let you live here, and you ought to da 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 da. And they're little kids. And I thought that was right because I was frustrated and miserable and self-consumed. And I was like, you need to get off my back and just be glad that I've made a way for you guys. And I felt like they owed me the world just because I got up and went to work. That was my life. And I despised going to work. And I wasn't the best employee, I promise. Did things in there I should have never did. And as soon as I got saved, it's amazing how all things become new and your perspective can change. And all of a sudden, I appreciated for the first time in my life the honor of working. I appreciated the job. I used to thank God for it. And I actually couldn't wait to go because of the contact I had with people and the example I was able to set. I had a real issue too because I was union and I had bosses that started to take advantage of my pliability, whatever you want to call it. I would just go with the flow. I didn't pull my rank and my rights. I didn't bump things down. If they asked me to unload a trailer, I didn't say, well, I have seniority. You need to give it to so-and-so. I don't want to do that. I'd say, yes, sir, sure, man. And with all my heart, I'd do it under the Lord. Now I got a problem with my coworkers. Now my coworkers are, well, why didn't you bump that down? They're going to expect all us to do these jobs, man. You're sitting here, man, what are you doing, man? You're bucking the system. You need to bump that down. Why would I bump it down? I don't mind doing it. I'm enjoying doing it. It's fine. I don't have any need to bump it down. Why would I bump it down? It's not a reflection on you. You guys are panicking. It's okay. Chill out. Just man, be thankful we got jobs. Oh, man, you are just, and now I had all this pressure. Now I had bosses taking advantage of my heart. Because they would ask me to do things that if they asked somebody else to do, they would throw a fit and stand for their... But I got a real issue now because I gave my rights away and I'm just there to do my work under the Lord. I'm not even working for them. I'm under the Lord. And I'm a day's wage for a day's work. And I was doing my work under the Lord. And now all of a sudden I'm working too fast to my union employees. All of a sudden I'm doing too much. All of a sudden you're making it bad on the rest of us. And now I had that whole issue going on because of self-preservation. A supervisor got saved through that whole setting. He called me at home and said, Dan, I see what you're going through, and I see what the supervisors, and he was a supervisor, I see what the supervisors are doing too, and I see the pressure that it's creating with the coworkers. And because the supervisors are using you and getting away with it and it's benefiting them, they don't care. It's at the cost of you and under that pressure, but yet you aren't changing. You're so the same all the time, and you're not fighting back. You're not changing. You're just always the same. He was overwhelmed on the phone. He said, I don't know how you live the way you do. And he was so respecting my life. And watch what he said. He said, I know you're going to say it's Jesus, but I need to understand what you mean. Can we talk? I said, I'd love to talk. He came over to my house and got saved. Because he was honoring my life in the real everyday rat race of it all. Where if my mind's not renewed, I'm just another Christian with issues. And God, why aren't you showing me favor? God, why don't you take this pressure off of me? God, why are you letting these people treat me like this? God, me, 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 me. And when are you going to get me on a better shift? Because you know I don't like getting up. And God, when are you going Fast. There's a place for thanksgiving. There's a place for appreciating the position you're in. And making the most of it, and maybe even getting a vision that it's a season. But it's a season of increase. It's a season of maturity. It's a season of making the most of every opportunity, like it or not. Because whoever said that Christianity was designed to pacify the flesh? It crucifies the flesh. And all of a sudden, Christians know, or people know that you're a Christian and go to church, and people know that you're sincere in many ways, but you have the same, watch, I'm not being mean, the same complain life that they do. The same mentality that they do, that you can actually relate and you're on the same page and yet you go to church. What is so significant then about your Christianity? It boils it down to just a belief system that you embrace and they don't. Because your lives generally are the same. It was never designed to be that way. You're light in dark places. You're love in the midst of hate and resentment. You're selfless in the midst of selfish. You're peace in the midst of contention. You're mercy in an unmerciful, merciless society. Never forget that. Okay?
So much of the mindset of people is they complain if they don't have work, then they complain when they do have work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just... complaining all the time about one thing or another.
There's usually, if you look, you can find an issue with something in your life. And you have to be very careful that you're not trapped into that and calling that normal. That's all part of the fall. That's deception. It's a self-centered, it's a self-serving mindset. We have it so good because of him.
We have such a good ride.
We really do. If you see it right. Look, nobody puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment and the tear is made worse. Nor do they put new wine into old wineskins, or else the wineskins break, the wine is spilled, and the wineskins are ruined. But they put new wine into new wineskins. So Jesus is coming to introduce the new. He's revealing a dispensation of grace that's just about to come through his cross, and he's transforming the mindsets of men. And you can't take the mindset of the law, and you can't take the works to find favor with God and connect it with this grace that we live by. Do you understand? We're saved by grace through faith. One of the reasons that Paul was very persecuted is because he was trying to say that I'm saved and right with God because he says so. And that didn't fly in their culture and society. That's the reason he said in Romans, he didn't say it because he's not bashful or ashamed in the sense of standing on the street with a bullhorn and letting people know he's a Christian. He wasn't saying that when he says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. A lot of people, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Like, I'll speak it up in a crowd. That's not what he was saying. He's talking to a culture, right? A culture of people that were trapped in religion. He's saying, I'm not ashamed to say I believe in something that saves me by grace and not my works. That's what he's crying out. I'm not ashamed that God is saving me through the work of Jesus because he loves me. not based on my works. Because then he goes on in the later chapters of Romans 2 and 3 and 4 and says, look, if it's by my works, then there's a debt to be paid. If it's by grace, then there's none. It's, you get it? Yeah. So Jesus is transitioning here and he's saying, look, when I'm gone, they're going to do this. They're going to fast. But nobody puts a... It's not the way you think. It's not the old fast. It's not the mentality. It's not to find favor with God. The fact that I'm here reveals you've already found favor with God. Do you get this? Because that little section of Scripture is right on the heels of them fasting. And what he wants to do is change the why behind our lives. If you try to put new wine into old wineskins, it's going to burst and the wine's going to be spilled. You put new wine in new wineskins. So if there's a new covenant and new testament of grace of God towards men through Jesus Christ, then there has to be a new why behind our life that makes us right with God and a new way that we live from. And in that day they'll fast. Why? So that they stay in tune, suppress everything about flesh, works, pride, achievement, accomplishment, earnings, doing to feel better about ourselves, doing to be. It's detrimental to your Christian life. You following this? Jesus is changing all that. So he says, what does he say? He says, in that day when he's taken away, it says, then they what?
Will.
Then they what?
Will.
I touched this the other day. Back up to Matthew 6 real quick. So they will. They will fast, right? Verse 16, Matthew 6. He starts off the chapter, your charitable deeds. Don't do them to be seen by men. Don't sound a trumpet, or you'll be just like the hypocrites and have your reward in already. The best you'll receive from men is the best you're going to get. Wow, he's such an awesome... How else can you lay down, sell, give away all your goods and give your body to be burned and it be worth nothing? In 1 Corinthians 13 in the love chapter. You give all your goods to the poor and your body to be burned and it's worth nothing. Why? If it wasn't love. Because then you did it for your own name. You did it for whatever legacy you leave for your own name, for people to build a statue in the city and remember you forever. There's some reason you did it if it's not love and it has to do with self. And it's worth a big fat what? So don't blow a trumpet like the hypocrites so that men say, wow, they're so amazing, right? You don't need people to say you're so amazing. You need to see you're so amazing that you're worth the blood of Jesus and then come into the understanding of that truth. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand's even doing, so the deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. That's a really super pure place. When you pray, man, don't be like the hypocrites. They love to pray in the synagogues. They like to be seen by men is what he's saying. Well, he says it. They see by men. They have their reward already. Whatever they receive from men is the best they're going to receive. But when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut the door, pray to your Father who's in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Isn't that awesome? Look at verse 16. Moreover, when you fast, not if you fast. Now you have to be careful that you don't hear what I'm saying. Legalistic, like Mary said today, are you going to call us to a fast? And she was wondering because of the cooking and the breakfast and the whole nine yards. So she asked me with a good reason. I said, no, I'm not calling you guys to a fast. A fast is your privilege. It's from your heart. I'm not calling you to a fast. There's a place where I believe God can call us to a fast. David Hogan, they get in their ministry, they feel like God's calling them to a corporate fast, so they'll do it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's your privilege to fast. And in the level of faith, you'll receive grace if you begin to step out. Even if you just say, you know what, I'm just going to miss supper here one of these days. It's not just going on this long fast. Just miss supper and catch the concept and walk it out and catch the joy of communing. And all of a sudden, a week later, you might think, you know what? I'm just going to fast the whole day. Fast the whole day. Step out and just go for 3 days if you want. But don't set some goal that you can fail. Just start to fast. For years, in the month of February, I just would shut down and fast. And if I fasted the whole month, I'd fast the whole month. I didn't have a goal. I would just fast and didn't have a goal. Why? It was just a good time of the year for me. It was something I locked into and just went on a fast. But if I came off in 2 weeks, I didn't fail. It was my privilege to enjoy that time and what it accomplished. If I fasted the whole month, and I don't talk time, I'm giving you an example so you don't come under the law in your mindset. You see what I mean? To where, oh man, I didn't make it. No, you stepped out in something with a good heart and you're accomplishing something. When you start saying I didn't make it, you subvert everything that God's building in you. And you're just going back to an old mindset that doesn't produce life. I honestly believe healthy fasting and prayer will cause you to not even walk in that mindset anymore. It'll bring you into a mindset of grace. It'll bring you into a mindset of selflessness. Prayer and fasting will make you so not self-conscious, but Christ in you, the hope of glory conscious. I believe that. So he says this, when you fast, don't be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. The best they get out of that is the best they're going to get. Look, but when you fast, see, it's not to draw attention. It's not for you to be acknowledged, honored. Wow, you're so spiritual. You're amazing. How do you fast so much? David Hogan said his wife, every time he's in the jungles and or traveling and not at home, because he leaves sometimes for months at a time, month or two or three at a time, she fasts 21 days every month he's gone. He said, she's an amazing woman. I don't know how she does it. He said, I don't believe I can do that, but she does it. He said she fasts 21 days every month. And if she breaks, then she comes off. She takes 9 days, starts to come off. If he leaves the town again, she goes right back on 21 days. Food abstention. Isn't that amazing? Just praying, interceding, seeking. Because of that, he shares a testimony where he was dying. They got lost in a jungle and ran out of water and supplies, and him and the two men were dying. They were trying to find villages that were supposed to be on this map in these deep jungles, and they just weren't there. And they got lost, and he said they were literally dying. And a car came, this four-wheel drive thing, came down this old road they were walking on that looked like nobody had driven on forever, and he had no sign of human life or anything, and they had ran out of supplies, water, food, and they were dying. And he said they were literally laying on the ground dying, couldn't sit up anymore. He said he took his last step and fell over and laid there, and they were expecting to die. His wife at home just knew that whole thing was going on and was just interceding and praying, and she was fasting, and God just illuminated her and she said, I know he's in trouble, Lord, and I thank you right now. Bam, bam, bam. And she refused. She just totally sought God and prayed the whole time through, and help came right when they were dying. And he said that they put ice water on his lips and tipping it into his mouth. He says, just can't believe how good water tastes, ice water. And then they gave him a little bite of a roast beef sandwich. He was like, roast beef. He said you could literally feel it go through his body and just give him strength. And it was just neat, but his wife was in that place of just seeking and fasting and praying. But isn't that cool? It's not then about fear, anxiety. Oh my God, you got to help him. Something's got to be wrong. I'd have heard from him by now. Ba, 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 ba. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. That's where we live from so much. So much. And then we quote all the stuff we've learned in church. That rarely seems to work. Because it's not a work. It's a relationship. It's a knowing. Y'all all right? So, when you fast, And the reason I turned you there, there's a couple reasons, but the main reason is not if you fast, when you fast. He's expecting us in our surrendered life, denying ourselves, to understand this concept that we want to renew ourselves in the spirit of our mind. True? And we don't want those hidden things of the heart to be nipping us in the bud all the time. Right? We don't. Do you want that? Do you want little hidden things of the heart? Little selfishnesses, little fairnesses, little unbeliefs, little mindsets of anxiety, fear, self-preservations? Do you want them to stay alive and be maintained and mix them with the gospel? I know I don't. I don't believe you do. I don't believe you're in this school to do that. So when you fast, it means that fasting is important, yes.
My Bible doesn't say that. My Bible says alms. Why does it say that?
In verse 16?
All of chapter 6 doesn't even say it for a fast.
What's it say in 16?
Alms the whole time.
Really?
So,
the 16. Moreover, when you... 16. Yeah. When you fast. Because he is talking about charitable deeds and alms and giving for the whole first part of the chapter. And then he rolls into prayer. And then he rolls into fasting. So you got it. 16. Right? When you fast. So then look at verse 17. When you fast. But you... Who's he talking to? He's on the Sermon on the Mount. He's talking to the crowds. So he's talking to everybody. So he's talking to us. Right? He's not even talking to his disciples. He's talking to the crowd. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face so that you don't appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Well, this is simple. Why would we appear to be fasting as if it's some drudgery and mourning thing when we're actually crushing that cry of the flesh and we're not walking around going, oh man, I'd love to eat, but I can't right now? That defeats the whole purpose. So you don't walk around to appear to be fasting, because the whole purpose of fasting is to crush the cry of the flesh and to subdue those desires. Does it make sense? So anoint your face and get spirit conscious and get spirit minded and walk through your life by the Spirit. Amen. Real quick, Galatians chapter 5. I didn't think we were going to go there, but I feel like we're supposed to now. I say then, verse 16, Galatians 5, 16. I say then, walk in the Spirit. Watch this. Man, this is awesome. People try to use Romans 7 as a reason to just miss the mark. And sometimes different verses, they'll read out of context as if we're always just going to live by the flesh. But watch this. Walk in the Spirit and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. So the flesh is trying to raise up a voice in your life, to where its voice is louder than your heart cry for God, where it's louder than your heart cry for surrender, for love, for mercy. The voice of the flesh tries to rise up where that voice is louder than the voice that says forgive. And all of a sudden the voice of the flesh has audience with your soul and tells you why you shouldn't forgive, and all of a sudden you're agreeing with and going, yeah. Right, yeah, and there's a way that seems right then. Right? But you walk in the Spirit. You walk in the Spirit. You're in tune with the mind of God. You're walking by grace. You understand your life is a privilege. You're not frustrated. You're thankful. You're not wanting for nothing. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. That's just a good place to live. Meaning needy. Like, well, God, when am I going to get my due? You're blessing everybody, it seems. When am I going to get blessed? You know? If you would stay thankful, you would see the power of thankfulness. It's not, wow, my three friends got raises. When's my raise coming, God? You know, people talk and think like that and pray like that. Fast. No, I'm just kidding. But serious, that's the subtleties. It's just, I say then, walk in the Spirit and you what? Shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh, which means the flesh has a voice, has a suggestion, has an enticement. And you're going to find that because you and I lived a certain way, those things try to come back. They try to poke you and touch you and draw you and snare you at times in your life. Serious. You can be walking so healthy and so good in an area, and there could be something in your life that's truly unfair. Circumstantially, relationally, truly unfair in the eyes of the world, in the eyes of the natural wisdom, and just really unfair. And because we've been taught a certain way, you can be doing good in the spirit, and in time, you can slowly submit to the rightness of that mentality that just highlights what's unfair. And you'll become a product of somebody being treated unfair. Just think if Jesus would have shifted that gear, tempted at all points, yet without sin. Just think if Jesus would have shifted that gear when it was so unfair. And stepped out of love. But see, love never fails. My prayer is that we would just become love and live, I love you. We wouldn't have to lean on the phrase so much. I love you. It's usually shrouded with weakness and implications and strings, usually. Because we're such pushovers with sentiment and all that stuff. We just are. I love you. Really? Tell me again. Go on, just being real. Oh, God, help me. It's good. It's the end of class. I'm getting in trouble quick. For the flesh lusts against the spirit. You have to understand that there was only a separation of the two and an awareness of the two when man ate the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. Man's flesh, soul, and spirit, soul, and flesh were one and in agreement before sin. Did you ever think about that? So I pray that way. And I thank God that the redemption of Jesus hasn't left me stranded as a man bound to the flesh. And I thank you, Father, that I'm a man of the spirit. I'm a spirit man. And I have a soul. And my flesh follows along and says, yes, sir. And I pray that way. And I thank God that I live out of my spirit. I'm a man of God, and my soul is in total agreement with you and my flesh. I even pray this way. Father, I thank you that my spirit's willing and my flesh has been made strong by the truth of the gospel. Not strong in the flesh, strong in God. You get what I'm saying? Jesus didn't say your flesh is weak, damning you to be weak in the flesh. He said, if you don't pray, he said, watch and pray because the spirit's willing, the flesh is weak. So if you watch and pray, what are you doing? Not fulfilling the lust of the flesh. So the flesh is not weak then. Do you get it? So if you read one-liners, you give your flesh a lot of permission. Your flesh is looking for permission. Your flesh wants an easy out. It's like, come on, man, be lighten up on me. Dude, come on. Love me a little. Serious, that's what your flesh has a voice. When you're fasting a couple days, your flesh is screaming out, I thought we were friends. We've been through thick and thin, man. What are you doing? I've been with you all since the beginning. Serious. Watch this. The flesh is lusting against what? The spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another. Wow. Totally contrary. So there's a place where our spirit man and our flesh man need to be brought into a union and communion where our flesh can be trained. Through fasting and the Spirit of God, where actually we can become selfless. Do you believe that Jesus was selfless? So his flesh wasn't weak, was it? To the point that you could beat him and he could feel the pain and be unjustly battered and beat and bloodied and not run out of that place. He stayed in that place, Dick. That's intense. You better have a grip on what we're saying if you're going to start getting treated that unjustly. And not buckle. You'll have to be dead to yourself. True? Because it's just not fair, is it? It's not fair that one would have to die for all. It's not fair that we would have to sin and he would have to be punished. Come on. Then what are we thinking about fair for? Because he has some serious issues if he goes on that line of thought. He has a pretty good court case. And he is very justified in the flesh. But we don't live by the flesh. We live by the Spirit. Go Come on, you always have to go back to Jesus. He's the author and finisher of your faith. You look unto him. If you're starting to feel sorry for yourself, real good time to look unto him. And I say it all the time, feeling sorry for yourself is a major trap. Boy, I got on that at Washington, didn't I? About feeling sorry for yourself and about not, I said, I'm not trying to be insensitive to people, and I know some people have some traumatic stuff happen in your life, but I said, listen, you're not 8, you might be 48, you're not 8, you're 28, and Christ has come. Why are you still 8 when you're 28 and Jesus is here and the truth's revealed? I'm sorry that happened, but it's not relevant now. I hit it harder than I ever hit it. For our little window, there was total grace to do it too. It was intense. I actually said, what are we going to do? Say, but you don't know what I've been through. Well, you don't know what others have been through. What are we going to do? Hash stories and compare the trauma to see who has the right to be the most mess? Talk about appeasing the flesh. Now, is that insensitive language, or is that the language of love that says, come on, what are we doing? Because if I'm reserving that kind of right, I'm actually giving my flesh permission to be outside of him. And I have it all aligned to why. And I learn to defend that place and it overtakes my identity. Come on, what a tragic lie. Are you following this?
Yeah.
Don't you ever go there. Nobody, for some reason, I go over that thing a lot in this class. So just don't give yourself permission. These are contrary to one another, so you do not do the things that you wish. I have underneath there, I have that underlined. It said, that way you trust in God and his grace. See, that right there should sober me. That apart from him, I'm going to mess up. Apart from him, there's things built in me to be a certain way, and there's something contrary pulling me another way. Does that make sense? So I'm not going to do the thing I wish. That's Paul without Christ. The things I want to do, I what? But that's without Christ. He says, who will save me, O wretched man that I am? What a terrible place. I've got this inherent value. I've got this created value. I've got this destiny birthed on the inside of me. And everything that I want to do, I can't even do because I'm trapped in this flesh. I'm trapped as a man. And everything that I don't want to do is the very thing I do. Don't touch that. It's hot. You'll get burned. Ah. You know, we tend to have that in us. We're born into Adam. If you tell a group of people, look, I don't want anybody to use the side door tonight. You need to not use the side door. Everybody, please make sure you got this door. It just doesn't fail. Somebody comes up with a reason, and they're sure it's justified to use the side door. Well, look, I was parked way over, and I was parked right there. I figured it wouldn't hurt if I just slip out and get it. But didn't we say don't use the side? Well, yeah, but I'm parked right outside. I just figured it would be quick. It's so cold. There's some reason to justify doing what we're told not to do. That's why we needed Jesus. Amen. It's called sin. To him that knows to do right and doesn't, to him it is. Because you violate your conscience. Once you cross that line, it needs dealt with. Now watch this. But if you are led by the Spirit, this is awesome. Wow, this is real good. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not what? Under the law. That means if God's love touches you and begins to motivate you and knowing him and growing, that's why you can't fail if you start stepping out and fasting. That's why it's never about failing and being condemned. You're not under the law. Even if you stumble, you jump up and you run to Daddy. Why? Because you're not under the law. Do we sin because we're not under the law? Do we sin more because we're not under the law and we're under grace? Of course not. But it's not the end of the world. It's not about failing. It's about growing up in him. Do you follow this? Are you sure you're getting this? Okay, I wasn't convinced inside. I was just wondering. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Oh, that's so good. So you find the benefit in everything you're pursuing in him. Even if it feels like you pulled up short. Even if on the sixth day of fasting and you were sure you were going to go 10, you just say, God, you know what? Man, I'm just going to come off this thing and I thank you. I'm not under works, but thank you that I came 6 days into this. And I feel like I've grown and I've known you more. And right now I'm just feeling like I need to come off. But thank you for loving me. That right there, the ability to receive that kind of grace in the midst of coming off at 6 days instead of 10 shows how you're maturing and growing and how God's increasing in your life. Because the average person comes off at 6, they're condemned, feel like they failed, don't have the heart to even try again because everything I do, I don't even finish. Da-da-da-da-da. What a loser. It's a wonder you even love me, God. It's a totally contrast mentality that produces no life. Following? Okay. Got a couple minutes here. Look at the works of the flesh. This is why we fast. The works of the flesh are evident. Adultery, fornication. Honestly, can I be straight with this adultery thing? The only reason you commit adultery, can possibly commit adultery, is because you're thinking for yourself. You have some reason, some need, some affection, some fantasy. It's self-serving lies. You can't possibly commit adultery apart from selfishness. Can't possibly. You're hurt. You haven't been getting the affection you're due. I had two Christians in fornicating adulterous affair that tried to tell me that it was God answering their prayer, bringing them together because their spouses have intended to them for so long and they were so hurt that they needed this season of healing and that God orchestrated this to heal them and get them back to a healthy place. And you never saw me personally, promise you. You saw me passionate last week. You never saw me talk to any human being like I talked to them. I promise. And I wasn't out of order. When you start letting grace produce that, and if you love somebody, you won't just go, whew, and walk away and tell your friend. You will look them in the eyes and you will bring them back to sobriety. Could have been that willful thing Mick was talking about. I don't know. They could have actually started to give themselves to that line so much that they actually believed it. All of a sudden, while they're together praying and thanking God for their relationship or something. Having the form of godliness, denying its power. But why are they together? Watch. Why is their justification so twisted? Because what they're admitting is they're hurt. They're let down. Failed expectations. So is this love or needs driven? It's a band-aid trying to stop the bleeding that creates even more of a wound. Selfishness is a wretched, horrible thing. Okay. I highlighted that one. Everything else on the list is because of selfishness. How's that for truth? But I highlighted the first one because there's a language that says, yeah, but you don't know what they put me through. But I've been married and I felt so alone. I've been a married single person for 10 years. And you're telling me I can't just be loved once in a while. Yeah, that's exactly right, Alana. It's yak, yak, yak. That's what you were doing, right? That's just yak, yak, yak. Just get born again. Get saved. Get free from yourself and get real. Come on. I'm not being mean when I talk like that. It's one of the biggest, and the church has as much of that stuff going on in it as the world, because our whole goal is to make it to heaven instead of being like Him. And now we feel like we're missing something on the earth because we're Christians. It's the same principle of fasting. So it's like young Patrick in the Lord. When I say young Patrick, meaning young in the Lord, grow and learn, and Daniel fast. And now he's fasting and he has a good heart and he's feeling like he's missing out on some good things. A Christian, he's denying himself. He's fasting himself. And all of a sudden, man, it was more pleasure when I wasn't a Christian. Man, I could at least have fun. And that whole mentality creeps into people if they don't understand why they're saved. It's the same thing. You get what I'm saying? He actually had a great privilege. He went to supper and got to share with his family. And it's funny how when you, why don't you eat, man? And you try to tell them, and then people get defensive and think you're reflecting on them. Well, so it's wrong to eat steak? What? So am I sinning right now? What? So I don't know God? What? What's wrong? What? So I just ordered a potato? You know, it's just funny how that's because we're so self-defending. And Let me just read this quick. I'm 4 minutes late, and I'm sorry. I started 8 minutes late. That wasn't your fault. Now the works of the flesh are evident. Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambition, dissension, heresies, envy, murder, drunkenness. I didn't share with you how I go into a fast. I don't have time right now. We can do that. I'm not sure. I'll see if God wants me to even do that, because I don't want you to puppet that. It has to be real. But when you see what these things are, I read these scriptures a lot. I read perilous times in these perilous times, and then it'll be this, 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 and this. I read those lists a lot. I read the Matthew's 24s and 5s. I read that because lawlessness abounds the love of many, and I read those lists. I actually read those a lot. Why? Because I keep myself sober and assured in my conscience that there's nothing permissible in me that's on those lists. You get what I'm saying? I don't want the right to have an outburst towards John. Do you get it? I don't want the right to have dissension. I don't want to look into your life or my life and your life and come up with an agreeable place that dictates the flesh. So it just keeps you good. So when you're fasting, you renounce these things. Thank God you're separate from these things. You're not fasting because you're such a mess. You're fasting because you want to know him more. Hello? Come on, that's clear, right? Isn't that how we get sometimes? We're doing this because we're such a mess. No, I'm fasting because of the privilege of getting renewed in my mind. But the fruit of the Spirit is this: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Watch this. Against such there is no law. You see how the gospel makes us free from the law? Because against love there's no law. Love is the fulfillment of the law. And those who are Christ's have, watch this, this is heavy, this is intense. This is why we fast. Those who are Christ's, those who are sincere, they've given themselves to him and denied themselves, have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. So is the flesh full of passion and desire? That doesn't just mean sin, guys, like lustful, sinful stuff. It means rightness, selfishness, jealousy, pride, you shouldn't have, he said, she said. Right? But those who are Christ have what? Crucified. This process of prayer and fasting is a tool that helps you accomplish that and make sure he's a dead man. Bury him deep enough and cover him with enough dirt that you don't practice the resurrection of the dead. If we live in the Spirit, then we walk also in the Spirit. Let us also walk in the Spirit is what he's saying. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. There's a twist there and a contrast. If you read it, it's not a twist in perversion. It's a, let's not provoke one another and let's not envy one another. So watch this. We're going to walk by the Spirit. Let's not become conceited. Well, I'm a way better Christian than you. Man, if you understood God, you'd fast all the time. You'd this, you'd that. We carry that if we're not careful. If we have works in our roots. And the people that have works in their roots and aren't that, see this, you're here, I'm here. Then you envy that. Well, they're only having favor. Well, God's only blessing them because they're such a man. Well, they just, envy, provoking. You don't compare yourself among yourself. It's not wise. We all have the privilege of grace. I'm going to close with that. Patrick and his wife tomorrow, where are you going? Carroll County Hospital to pray for a little girl. If anybody wants to go with them, if you feel that in your heart right now and you want to go with them to pray for the little girl, Brooklyn, passed away this weekend. Is anybody aware of that? I didn't like to hear that. All the more reason why we need to grow, keep growing. You see Patrick. If you're interested, you see Patrick. They're going to pray for a little girl who is only how old? 11, and they found cervical cancer at age 11. It's just not good stuff. So we're in a war. All the more reason to seek God to grow, because there's little Brooklyns on the earth that need the gospel. There's families involved, and there's things that come out of all that stuff. I don't try to let that stuff motivate me, but that stuff does keep you sober. The motivation is God's amazing love for us through Jesus Christ. But Consuela left a message at my house that she passed this week, and we're at the end of the week, little Brooklyn. So really sincerely, if it's in your heart, pray for the family and just the grace and mercy of God to come upon situations like that, because they're very, very difficult. They have a lot of loose ends a lot of times with minds and thoughts and hearts. You have something you need to...
Yeah, quickly. Has anybody ordered sweatshirts for Becky Jansen? They are in. If you're not coming to the dinner tonight, then make sure you get them on the way out.
Oh, yeah, the dinner's tonight. What time's the dinner?
6:30.
6:30 tonight.